7.
Welcome back to the second hour of Shattering Myths. We still have Larry with us. What I'd like to do is read a statement made in Moshe's voice. He's inspired here by Yahweh. He's inspired two ways. He's writing the Torah, so he is clearly being inspired by God from that perspective. But this man was inspired the same way you and I can be inspired today. We can know everything that Moshe knew today, just as he learned it, which is that he read what he had written, just as we can read what he has written. If you want to know everything that Moses knew about Yahweh, his covenant, and the means to salvation, then all you have to do is read what Yahweh said through him. So this passage that I'm going to share with you is from Devarim 6:6. Devarim means words. It was replaced by a disgusting Greek name, Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy means second law. There's not one law, much less two. These words, which I am guiding and directing you with, now he's communicating the Torah. These words, which I am guiding and directing you with, now this is, the verb is shawa, means instructing you. It does not mean oppressing you. It does not mean causing you to submit, causing you to obey. He's not speaking of law here. He's speaking of that which guides and directs. He's speaking of the Torah. These words, these concepts, these statements, which I am guiding and directing you with this day, they should come to exist and always be on your heart. Now, the reason this is important is when the covenant is renewed and reaffirmed, and this is something that's going to occur in our not-too-distant future when Yahweh returns, he is going to write his Torah on our hearts. So this is speaking of that. Your goal should be to choose to learn this teaching by rote, reciting what you learn to your children. And you should consistently speak about these statements during your life and inside of your home and with your family. And as you walk along the path and when you lie down and rest and even when you stand up. The covered and the concealed, the sheltered and hidden, belong to Yahweh, our God. And those things which are revealed and made known belong to us, and they are for our children eternally and forever to act upon, to respond to, in accordance with the words of this, the Torah. It's pretty straightforward, isn't it, Larry? That God has asked us to listen to understand, to embrace his Torah teaching, and then to share it with our children, and to live with the Torah so that we teach our children all through our lives, when we stand up, when we lie down, when we walk, when we're at home, and when we're on the road, everywhere and all the time.
Yeah, it's obvious to me. That's what it's about.
There is nothing that God wants more than us to pay attention to his Torah. And yet, what is the book that is condemned and annulled in Pauline doctrine?
Of the Torah.
And so what you have is you have Christianity as a result of Pauline doctrine discounting and discarding the one thing that God says first and foremost, beyond everything else, listen to, learn, observe, appreciate, come to understand, and then share with your children and in your home my Torah teaching.
This kind of goes back to the question I asked, though. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward thing. But why is there such a disconnect between what people like wanting to know the truth and just being told something? Like, what causes that to happen? I mean, people.
Why is there a lack of understanding? Why is there an inability to make this connection? Here God said, what I want you to do, first and foremost, more than anything else, is listen to my words as they are articulated in this Torah. And so Christians who think they are honoring and serving and following this God do exactly the opposite. How is it that they're not able to make this connection? And then previously you asked the question, in the midst of here is an imam being chosen by kings, dictators, to usher in a peaceful and tolerant issue, the reign of democracy, when you know exactly the opposite is going to transpire, and yet United States tax dollars are being given to this man along with weapons, and Americans don't seem to understand why that's wrong. Why can't they make the connection? That's your question?
That ties into it. I mean, it's just a lot of things that people don't seem to want to make the connection to. They just take what they're being told, and that's, well, that's it, you know.
I think what you've asked is amongst the most important questions that anyone can ask. I'm going to devote the next at least segment and a half of this program to trying to answer it. It is a long answer, and I ask you to be a bit patient with me. There's only two ways that you can render people foolish. Foolish enough so that they trust human institutions which betray them. Only two ways. One is you preclude them from knowing the truth, that you feed them lies. And this was done, for example, throughout Europe under the control of cleric and king during the reign of the Holy Roman Empire. They made it punishable by death to own a copy of scripture translated into a language anyone in Europe spoke. And if you owned a copy, you were killed. And they filtered information to you so that the only information that you got was what they wanted you to hear. They told you lies. And so lies were the only source of information available to you. I was in the Soviet Union back at the time. It was the Soviet Union. The very same thing existed. The lies of communism and socialist secular humanism were ubiquitous. And yet the truth about what was happening around the world, and particularly the truth about Yahweh and his covenant, were unknown. And so if you can control people's access to information so they only get that which is polluted, that which is rotten, that which is untrue, you can control them. You can preclude them from thinking and making connections and therefore responding foolishly. Today, we live in a much different world. A fellow named Adam Weishaupt recognized this. He is the founder of socialist secular humanism as we know it today. He is actually the founder of America, although most people don't recognize this. He's the founder of the French Revolution as well, although most people don't recognize this. He is the inspiration behind the Communist Manifesto. What Adam Weishaupt recognizes, he was trying to replace a relationship with Yahweh and the truth about Yahweh with the religion of man, with socialist secular humanism, is he realized that we were moving towards a world where the control of information was going to become impossible. And so if information is ubiquitous, you have to control people in a different way. And he conceived the notion that we call today political correctness. In political correctness, the greatest crime is to be judgmental. To exercise good judgment is considered a crime. So even if you are awash in information, but you cannot process it judgmentally, if you can't be discriminating and discriminate between that which is true and that which is false, then you can continue to be played for a fool. So in our schools, in our media, in our state houses, we preach political correctness, which renders people incapable of thinking. And if you can't think, no matter how much information is available to you, it does you no good. So here we have lined, deceptive political and religious institutions garnering the support of a vast preponderance of people around the world, and Yah's testimony being rejected by the preponderance of people. And the reason that the information is ubiquitous, it's available, both sides, to everyone with their eyes open. But because the vast majority of people have squandered their nesalma, their God-given gift of a conscience, the ability to exercise good judgment and to think rationally, most people are played for fools. That's the world as we know it. Larry, any comment on that? Do you think that there's some sense there? Were you able to follow?
I think people who want to control other people, they do it through corruptions and they do it through limiting information. One of the things they do today is disinformation. You know, everybody knows about 1984, the book that George Orwell wrote, but there was a Huxley wrote a book called A Brave New World, where basically it was information overload that screws everybody up.
Right.
And I think that's really where we're at today, combined with the notions advanced by Weishaupt, the political correctness, never judge anything. That's one of the most quoted Bible verses that's completely wrong. What does that verse really say? Doesn't it say something like, I believe it says, don't lead others away or you'll find yourself has been led away? It doesn't say judge not, lest you be judged.
It's actually separate not, lest you be separated. And what it's telling us to do, Crino, is
leading people away.
Right, Crino is a Greek word for separate. Right. Now,
right.
So what you're saying is similar to what I've said. You've covered half of the equation. Half of the equation is to control.
Only cover about half of what you think most of the time.
Okay.
I'm not that smart. Okay?
No, you are. And what you said here is that there is a component of the second half of this solution that Weishaupt brought to the fore, which is that when you lose control over information, when you can no longer keep people in the dark and only feed them poison, as the clerics and kings did throughout Europe, for example, for 1,000 years, when you lose that control, which the Soviet Union lost control, which China is now losing control, when you lose control of information, then you have only two tools in addition to encouraging people not to think. One is disinformation, and the other is to have people swim in information. Scott was talking during the break that he put a filter on the emails to the various shows on the Genesis Communication Network. And the reason he did that is because there were hundreds of thousands of emails, but they didn't do anybody any good because there were too many of them to read. So you're actually better off with one email that has value than you are with 100,000, of which only one has value because you'll never find the one that has value. In our world today, how many voices are there in the public arena who are talking about Yah's testimony versus how many are there that are advancing the political and religious edicts of human institutions? I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. Our number is 877-300-7645. I'd like to reprise the statement that Moshe shared with us as it is memorialized in Yahweh's Torah teaching, because it is so essential to our ability to understand, and understanding is essential to our ability to run to respond appropriately to what God is offering. If we do not understand, we cannot respond appropriately. If we can't respond appropriately, then we cannot participate in the covenant. If we don't participate in the covenant, there is no salvation. These things follow one for another. He writes, these words, which I am guiding and directing you with this day, they should come to exist and always be on your heart. Your goal should be to choose to teach them by rote, by reciting them to your children. And you should consistently speak about them during your life and inside of your home with your family and as you walk along the path. And when you lie down and when you rest and when you stand up. The covered and concealed, they belong to Yahweh, our God. And those things which are revealed and made known, they belong to us, and they are for us and for our children eternally and forever to act upon, to respond to, and to conduct our lives in accordance with all of the words of the Torah. Torah means teaching. It's a signed, written, and enduring source of instruction, which flows forth that enables us to respond appropriately to God. That's all the Torah is. It's God's guidance. His means of teaching us so that we can come to know who He is, understand what He is offering, and respond appropriately. There's nothing more to it than that. And yet, if you were to survey all of the radio and television programs available around the world, and if you were to look at all of the newspapers and magazines that exist around the world, my guess is, between television and radio, magazines and newspapers, that you might find 5 devoted to sharing the instruction that Yahweh provided in this, the Torah.
I mean,
and that you would find you would find millions that would teach alliance to man's political and religious pontifications.
Oh, of course.
And yes, Larry.
I'm amazed. I haven't found 5.
I'm being generous.
Oh,
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I'm not aware of any other than this program.
I was floored.
I'm not aware of any. That's not to say that there aren't some. I hope there are. There is nothing I would like more in this regard, because it wouldn't be competition. It would be cooperation.
Bloggers that advance, you know, words written in ITG and yada yada, and that's all they use. So there are sources, yeah. But
yes,
bloggers.
There are. There's lots of internet sites like your own that promote Yah's message. And so on the internet, I would agree. There are probably scores, perhaps as many as 100 individual sites that are promoting Yah's Torah teaching. And so here is God being so explicit. He tells us that there's nothing more important for us than to focus on, to come to know and understand His Torah guidance, not only for ourselves, but for our children. It's our single most important responsibility, is to learn the Torah so we can teach the Torah to our children. And even after, in fact, especially after, we have been reconciled unto Yahweh and been adopted into His covenant family, our mission in life is to live our lives not only in accordance with the Torah, but to teach the Torah to our children. And that's why when the covenant is ultimately renewed, as we're told in Yirmiyahu 31, when it is reaffirmed upon Yahweh's return on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, which is as the sun sets in Jerusalem,
2023.
Right. October 2nd, 6:22 p.m., 2033 in our pagan calendars, that the first thing, the very first thing, correct, that Yah was going to do is write His Torah on our hearts. Now, that's profound, because what that means, if God is going to reaffirm His covenant, as Yirmiyahu 31 tells us, upon His return, by writing His Torah on our hearts, we come to realize that it's impossible for there to be a Christian New Testament. God most certainly isn't going to reaffirm His one and only covenant by writing its Torah where it is presented on our hearts if He changed His mind and went in an entirely different direction. And it also means the Torah is teaching, that it's guidance and direction, all of which we will need in our future. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. In his letter to the Galatians, after denigrating the Torah, Paul claimed that it had become obsolete. And yet the basis of the covenant's renewal is upon the affirmation of the Torah. And here we are told that it will continue to guide our actions eternally and forever, ad olam. So if God is telling the truth, Paul was lying. It is that simple.
Whose words do you take? Whose word do you take there?
You know, it's interesting. Of course, the choice is obvious. If God was telling the truth, Paul was lying. So you have your choice in either trusting God or trusting Paul. It really is. It's worse than that for the Christian, because there is no possibility that Paul was telling the truth. There is the possibility that God was telling the truth. There's possibility that God was not telling the truth. You know, God's veracity rests on whether or not he is reliable and dependable, which means that he does not change or renege on what he has said, and he proves his reliability through countless fulfilled prophecies, which the odds of chance fulfillment are well beyond the number of fundamental particles in the entire known universe to one. And so God proves that he is telling us the truth. Paul proves that he is lying. You see, Paul actually says that he was inspired by God, that he was God's lone and authorized ambassador to the Gentile world. And yet he contradicts the very God who he claims authorized him. Now, if you claim that you are speaking on behalf of the God of the Torah and prophets, and then you contradict him, you are lying. It's just as simple as that.
I've got a question for you. You know, I mean, right sure. Up front, questioning Paul, you know, we see that the only person who advanced the pagan notion of gratia, or the graces,
yes.
was Sheol, right?
Yeah, that was his theme. He's...
Yeah, that
throughout
was
his books,
definitely
right.
His theme. Yeah, and yet we know that apparently him and Luke must have read a lot of Euripides, right? Because they put the kicking of the what is it, the
you can't kick against the goat.
The goad, yeah, right. That's the very word they put in Yahusha's mouth, straight out of a play, right? I mean, obviously
right.
There was some Euripides involved there.
And, yeah, and of course, who is the play written about, Larry?
Dionysus.
Right. It's called the Baccalaureate.
Escaped because jail, too, by an earthquake, and the chain
right.
fell off.
Right. And later, when Paul wrote his second letter to the Corinthians, and he spoke again of that prod, of that goad, this time being in his side, who did he identify that goad with? Who did he say that goad represented? Satan.
Satan.
He said he was demon-possessed.
Can I?
Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
Well, yes,
I mean,
yes.
People need to understand that the graces, you know, they make three appearances in Homer's Odyssey, don't
yeah.
they?
Right. Scott, what do you had a comment you wanted to make?
I was going to say that I can look at the things that Paul said and find many, many errors, many, many holes.
Right.
I can look at and read the stuff that Muhammad said.
Mm-hmm.
Do the same thing. Find a ton
right.
of errors, ton of holes.
Right.
Scientology, Mormonism, all that stuff.
You, right.
You find a lot of holes. And I can't
rely on Xenu and the volcano?
No, unfortunately, no. But
you're saying that Mormonism is dumb, 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 dumb?
Dumb, 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 yes.
Oh, come on, Scott. I'm losing all faith in you now.
But what I was going to say is that I'm pretty skeptical when it comes to things like this, and I like to do my due diligence. And what I find in the Torah, I'm not finding any holes, you know.
No.
Everything clicks into its spot. It fits. It makes sense, and it doesn't contradict itself, which is the thing that the other things have.
Right.
All the other religions, they begin to contradict themselves, and
right.
And once you start contradicting, that means there's holes. And
correct. Paul spoke both in favor of the Torah and against it. Muhammad spoke in favor of the Torah and against it. In fact, in Muhammad's Quran, Surah 2106 actually speaks of contradictions and saying that when we change our mind, we bring a new verse and we throw the old one into oblivion. What you have just said is the most rational way to go about evaluating whether or not something is true or false. What I've shared up to this point has been that Yahweh proves that his testimony in his Torah is reliable through prophecy. However, there is a more appealing way to determine whether or not something is truthful. And that is, does it contain internal contradiction, or is it eternally consistent? Does it tell the same story, and are there any holes in it? And what you have done is you've applied the most rational and logical standard that you can. Yah's Torah teaching is consistent. There are no holes in it. It is completely reliable. And the more you study it, the more closely you examine it, the more you evaluate what God has said, the more comfortable you become with Him. The more the pieces fall into place, the more the connections are made, the more you understand, the more you are in a position to say, I know this is true. Now, it's interesting that what, let me just interrupt one second here. It's interesting that what Larry talked about, the graces. You see, from Paul's perspective, he wanted you to believe in the gospel of grace. We've just spent a number of days going over Yah's insistence that we prioritize his Torah teaching, that we listen to him, that we observe what he had to tell us so that we come to understand. The difference between Yahweh here and Paul, and therefore Christianity and religions, is religions want you to believe. You don't need to know anything to believe. You can be irrational, illogical, and ignorant, and have faith.
And then hide behind that belief.
And that is correct. And yet, from God's perspective, he never speaks of faith. He never speaks of belief. He doesn't want you to believe him. He doesn't want you to place your faith in him. He wants you to come to know him and understand him. Because when you know and understand, you can trust and rely. These are absolutely polar opposites, my friend. God wants you to focus on his teaching so that you come to know and understand. And as a result of knowing and understanding, faith and belief are counterproductive. I know Yahweh. I don't believe him. I understand Yahweh. I don't have to put my faith in him. They are so powerful, the difference between these concepts.
Well, here's another thing is, would you rather have a God that you have to have faith in, or would you rather have a God that has faith in you? Because he gave us all the tools, and he said to us, find me.
Right. He trusts us that he knows that if I give you these tools, if I give you life, if I give you free will, if I give you a conscience so that you can think, that you can use this soul which gives you the ability to be observant, and this nesama conscience which enables you to think and make connections, that if you use these gifts that I gave you, I'm confident you'll find me.
Yeah.
And when you find me, you'll come to know me. And when you come to know me, you'll come to like me. When you come to like me, you will come to appreciate what I'm offering you. And when you come to appreciate and understand what I'm offering you, I have the faith and trust in you that you will respond appropriately and decide that you want to be my children. That is so powerfully different than religion. And one of the things that's really interesting about this, Scott and Larry, is that with religion, salvation comes first. Now, in Islam, you never get to know Allah, but you become saved by killing. You know, you get eternal life by killing someone else. In Christianity, the goal is through belief in the gospel of grace is to be saved. Why would God want to spend eternity with someone who didn't even bother to get to know him?
He would.
You know, in the Torah, it's exactly the opposite. God says, come to get to know me first. Come to understand.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, come to understand the covenant that I am offering you. And once you know who I am and understand what I'm offering, then choose to respond. And if you respond to my covenant, I'll save you. But the relationship comes before salvation because God doesn't want to spend his eternity with someone that doesn't know him. And let me tell you, if you're a Christian and you come to actually know what we're going to be doing in heaven and what's not going to be there, for you it would be hell. Nothing you believe, nothing you like, nothing you cherish, if you're political, if you're a patriot, nothing that you care about will exist there. In fact, everything that you love will be condemned there.
I've got a question for you, Yada.
Sure.
When Adam was, when he breathed Nesama into Adam,
right,
and gave him a
conscience,
living spirit, You know,
he gave him a soul. What? He gave him a soul and a conscience. He gave him two things. He gave him a nefesh, which is his soul, which gave him consciousness. And then he breathed a nesalma into him, which is his conscience, that enabled him to use his consciousness to go from observation to understanding.
Yeah, okay. And my question to you is this. Was Adam made for religious purposes as a religious instrument, or was he made for companionship and association?
Well, all we have to do is read the story of the relationship that Yahweh created with Adam and Eden. And matter of fact, if you want to know what heaven is going to be like, look at the relationship between Adam and Yahweh and Eden. What did Yahweh do with Adam and Eden? He taught him. He instructed him. He talked with him. He walked with him. And so what heaven is going to be is us taking long walks with God, him teaching us about his universe and of life and his nature of us, of him teaching about everything that he has created so that we grow by learning, so that we grow by shared experiences. And that's what Eden was all about. That's what heaven is going to be all about. So it is, of course, the answer to your question is God created Adam and placed him in Eden for the express purpose of enjoying a relationship with him. Gone means
a religious instrument.
Right. Gone means it's a garden where things grow. So gone is an enclosed and protected garden that sponsors growth. And Eden, it means great joy. Just as the first child of the covenant was named Laughter, Ishak, the garden itself was named Great Joy. The thing that brings God pleasure is enjoying a relationship with his creation. That is what pleases God. That's why the universe exists. That's why life was conceived. That's why the Torah was revealed. That's why the covenant exists. When we accept its terms and conditions and become Yahweh's children, we make God smile. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Segment of Shattering Myths for today. I'm your host, Yada. We have Larry with us. It's interesting, during the program, a lot of the time we'll have conversations with Scott, the producer of the program. You hear his voice occasionally, several times even today. He mentioned a couple of things during the break. One of them was, God gave us all the tools that we would need to be able to find him, and then trusted that there would be enough of us who would use those tools to find him. In fact, he gave us the blueprint of his home and the map as to the path that leads us there. And, he had faith in us that a number of us would find him there. Just like if you gave tools to a carpenter and you gave a pile of wood, you'd have faith that that a number of those carpenters, particularly if they were given a sound set of blueprints and a map to the home site, would be able to construct a suitable house for you there. He gave us the tools, and we now have as the opportunity to find him.
Even though he knows...
That was well put by Scott. That was it.
Though he knows that some of those carpenters are going to throw hammers and try and cut each other with saws.
Yeah, it's true. It's also interesting that when you look at the gifts that God gave us, beyond the fact that he gave us a conscience and consciousness. Consciousness enables us to observe our environment, and conscience enables us to evaluate it. And he gave us these things under the auspices of free will. He gave us other tools as well. He gave us a sense of sight so that we can observe his Torah by reading it. He gave us a sense of hearing so we can recite his Torah and listen to what he has to say. He even gave us a sense of smell so we could distinguish between that which is rotten and that which is good and nourishing. He gave us mouths so we could choose and hands so we could choose what to consume, whether it would be religious poison or his teaching. We were given the tools to find him. Now, the fact that the vast majority of people squander those tools and misuse them and choose to throw, as Scott says, the hammers at each other's and cut each other's heads off with the saws, as opposed to wield them effectively. That's our choice. And God has said that this, first and foremost, in terms of that which I have given you so that you capitalize on your free will, you capitalize on your soul and your conscience, is my word, his dabar, the statements that he has presented in his Torah. In fact, I'd like to read a concluding thought that Yahweh shared with us. It's in the Devarim. It happens to be the very next statement after what we have just considered. He said, indeed, you should actually listen to Shema. You should actually hear the voice of Yahweh, your God. How do we do that? We read his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. When we read his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, we listen to Yahweh, our God's voice. For the reason of closely examining and carefully considering, Shamar, so that we observe, thoughtfully scrutinizing and studying the terms and conditions of his binding contract, his mitzvah, the directions and instructions regarding the covenant, and his clearly communicated prescriptions and recommendations in life for living, his engraved, his inscribed instructions that cut us into this relationship. This is Choke. Which are inscribed, katab, which are written, engraved, and permanently memorialized in the written scroll of the Torah. That doesn't leave any question. God says, you should actually listen to the voice of Yahweh your God for the purpose of closely examining and carefully considering the terms and conditions of his binding contract and of his clearly communicated prescriptions and recommendations for living, which are inscribed in the written scroll of the Torah. That's God's recommendation. It's what he wants us to do.
You're saying that Marcion can't introduce letters from a guy and then throw those words aside, calling them out of vogue or Old Testament, and create a new covenant, a new testament. So that wouldn't be possible.
You know, Hebrew is a language where there is no stuck-in-time notion that we have in English of past, present, and future. And so not only did God say in the previous statement that this teaching and guidance that is available to us through his Torah was for all time and was valid into eternity. By using these terms and these verbs in Hebrew in this statement, God has said that there is nothing more important than continuing and always listening to him and always examining, observing, and carefully considering that which is inscribed in the written scroll of his Torah. It exists forever. It is the lone path to God. I'm Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.
For health and vitality for you, your family, and friends, get the Healthy Start Pack from Youngevity, as recommended by registered pharmacists.